You are at war with yourself and likely don't realize it. Your thoughts, beliefs, habits, and actions often sabotage you. Are they helping you overcome adversity or setting you up for failure? To win this battle, you must connect with your inner warrior. We all have a warrior within us, one that strengthens our resolve and helps us to rise to meet life's challenges. If you're just surviving rather than thriving, then it's time to embrace the warrior archetype, live the warrior ethos, and ascend. If you are a veteran, first responder, or someone looking to take charge of your life, find your tribe, and then be the hero of your own story, this podcast is for you. Join Mike Kinney and Matt Hastings, two retired U.S. Army officers who served in U.S. Army Special Operations and Army Aviation Units, as they share with you optimal performance practices they learned in their time with the military and Warriors Ascent, a 501c3 nonprofit that helps veterans and warriors with PTS.
Well, all right. Welcome to the Warriors Ascent podcast with your hosts, Mike and Matt.
Boom.
And we've got a special guest. So let me just say this. When you think of woodpecker lips, right, you tend to think of like, man, hey, what hardness, right? I mean, what is harder than woodpecker lips? Nothing. Other than maybe a diamond, right? Yeah. Other than a diamond. Well, this man sitting right here is harder than woodpecker lips. Tony Hoffman, the grittiest dude I know. So no, in all joking aside, in keeping with, I'll say, the thematics for this season and many previous episodes, we talk about tribe, community, and people that you surround yourself with. And I'll tell you, Tony Hoffman is one of those guys, you know, personal friend, former board chair for Warriors Ascent, U.S. Army engineer, colonel retired, extreme endurance athlete, all of that. So I'm super stoked, happy, and honored to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to have him on two. This one we'll talk about is, you know, Army exploits, how we came to know one another, working together at Warriors Ascent, and the subsequent podcast will really delve into his crazy, you know, endurance exploits in terms of the Leadville Trail Marathon, the 100 miler, and all sorts of other crazy stuff. He's truly a glutton for punishment. So I'll shut up now. With all of that being said, Tony, welcome to the podcast. We're super jazzed to have you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Matt. Great to be here. Excited to talk to your tribe with Warriors Ascent.
Yeah, fabulous.
Hell yeah. So, you know, let me pull this up. So you're a West Pointer, man. I like that, right? So I'm in your group 93. When I first met Tony, he made me salute him. And we're old school. And I had a brace and, you know, plebe knowledge and all that. No, I'm just joking. No, but so West Point guy, Army engineer, Ranger qualified, right? So again, there's some hardness there, retired colonel. And we'll talk about, I'll say, various interests that Tony has. I mean, first and foremost, I'm calling it Army personnel transition to the workforce. I know Tony's very passionate about making sure that our soldiers, and for that matter, sailors, airmen, and Marines, when they separate, that they have a soft landing in the corporate sector. And in as much as he and, you know, a lot of his, I'll say, friends and contemporaries try to help, I'll say, pave the way and educate people to make that soft landing. I mean, I know he does a lot of stuff at, Lewis McChord, I think you fly out a bunch.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And as an engineer that, you know, Army engineer that has really made the transition to engineering in the private sector, he's definitely has a lot of insight and a lot to speak about that. And then, of course, stopping veteran suicide, which is really, quite frankly, where we came to know one another. And I'll let Tony tell that story. But so please, Tony, take it away.
Yeah, I think a little background, gentlemen. So again, great to be here, Mike, Matt, mm-hmm. and for your community. A little background on the military piece. Took a circuitous route to West Point. So I was enlisted first. Oh, enlisted wow. out of high school, 1983, junior year in high school. Signed up under the delayed entry program.
Yep, I'm familiar with that.
With the intent to do 2 years in the military, get out, and try to put myself through college. I think my background matters. Grew up in a town of 720 people, graduating class of 34.
Yeah.
Father was an entrepreneur, small business owner, automatic transmission shop that will be 70 years old this year and is still in business today in the same city. Third owner, I remember the owner when I was in about seventh grade, he took it over and his son now runs it in the same, my hometown. Still has Hoffman Automatic Transmission. I get no royalties from that, okay? But I think I mentioned that not to bore your listeners, but more importantly, that's where I came from. That's my background. It's a great place to grow up. A no-nonsense blue-collar area, a rural farming community. You kind of get what you pay for. No theatrics, no drama. You put the work in and try to get the results, but no fanfare, great community, great friends, etc. Again, enlisted to try to put myself through college. First college graduate in my family. My other sibling, my sister, 2 years older, very successful, retired from Great Clips, owner, general manager, retired a few years ago. So the college thing isn't like, hey, you've got to go to college to be successful.
That's true, yeah.
But I wanted to go to college, did not see a path forward to maybe taking over my father's business. Wasn't an interest to me, and agriculture really wasn't an interest. So you're kind of in, okay, what do you do? Look towards the military. My father had served 8.5 years, was a E7 in the military. Mm-hmm. It was never pushed on me, but I decided the Army didn't look at any other service. There is only one service, right? I mean, the Army. No, just kidding.
But, biased here, yeah.
But anyway, it was a way to maybe see the world and pay for an education, hopefully, and a 2-year enlistment. Well, one thing led to another. Went to Army basic training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, then advanced individual training at Fort Gordon, Georgia. And two privates, lowest rank in the military, went to the education center to apply and figure out how to get to the military academy preparatory school.
Yep, it's okay. USMAPs in Fort Monmouth, right?
Yeah, it was at Fort Monmouth at the time. I didn't even know there was a preparatory school. The kid that I was with was a Army National Guardsman out of Cleveland. And he had the intention to go in. He drugged me into it. We went to get information at the education center. He went his way to Cleveland. I went back to Minnesota on leave to go to my first duty assignment, Fort Riley, Kansas. Never saw Brian Schaefer again. I applied, don't know what happened to him, and was accepted somehow into the Military Academy Prep School. And then a year there and earned an appointment to West Point through Congressman Arlen Stanglin out of the state of Minnesota. So the point there is that's what America's about. It's about opportunity.
That's right.
We had no political ties to anybody. I just very fortunate to be given the opportunity to go to one of our nation's military academies.
That's amazing.
So anyway, I think it's important. And then ended up staying in the military for 26 years, but along the way, almost got out 3 or 4 different times. It was never a goal to do 20 years. Met my wife, Susan, along the way. We'll be married 29 years in December this year. And 3 wonderful kids brought us to Kansas City area, where I was an Army colonel in really commanding the Army Corps of Engineers Kansas City District. That's what brought us to this region. And then we decided in 2013 to stop moving. Had 3 kids in middle school and below. And it was just time to start a different career after the military career. So a lot in between, as both of you know, with your service. Thank you for your service, both of you. And there's a lot of gaps in there. But that's what brought us to Kansas City and then ultimately to then transition out of the military in 2013. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I can relate. You know, there's a point at which you're like, all right, hey, time to stop moving, settle down, have a family.
Yeah.
You know, and not that the two are irreconcilable, but it does get pretty hard.
Yeah, it's hard on them, for sure.
But you both talked about the veteran transition piece. So I left the military in 2013, solely not to retire, to start a second career. I mean, have family and kids still in middle school and elementary school. So I transitioned out of Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, which is nearby Kansas City here, and went through the process, and I don't want to knock the process, the Soldier for Life Transition Assistance Program. I think it serves a great purpose, but did come out of there underwhelmed. Again, having been enlisted and an officer, saw things through a bit of a different set of eyes, was very fortunate. I was an Army engineer, probably got to work with non-military the better part of my maybe last 10 years in the military. So had an advantage from the perspective of maybe a softer landing,
right.
Was a degreed engineer, a couple master's degrees. But I left the transition program at Leavenworth that had both officers and non-commissioned officers underwhelmed and really thought, you know, what are we doing for our enlisted folks to make sure that they have a good path forward for meaningful employment to contribute to society, the society that they once left? And with that started, we started through the Society of American Military Engineers Transition Assistance Programs to have folks who had made the transition to go talk to mainly lower enlisted folks that were transitioning to really let them know what can you really expect when you get out.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
And maybe fill the gaps mm-hmm. between what the Soldier for Life Transition Assistance Program was doing
right.
and what I would say reality was. And again, I don't want to knock the program.
Sure, no,
it's
absolutely.
Served a purpose.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, when we talk mental health or other things, and I'm not a mental health clinician, I do think it matters because we want, I think we want our military members to get back into the society they left when they joined the military and to make meaningful contributions. And I think that's what a military member wants to do as well is, I've served my country. I want to continue to do very good things for my country, my community, and have gainful employment. I think there's still a gap, quite frankly, but we tried to fill some of that gap by educating folks and maybe hoping to really give them what they can really expect when they get out of the military. So that was my passion. I still am passionate about it, whether regardless of rank. I think it's important because people want, they left a great team in the military and they want to contribute to other great teams as well.
That's absolutely true. I mean, and I feel like the same exact could be said for me. I was hoping for a little something out of that transition course. And I think coming in as kind of a senior guy, and I came out of Fort Riley, Kansas. Again, I don't want to knock him either, but they're like, hey, Chief, you don't want to probably sit through this. And it's like, no, actually, I wouldn't mind. They're like, really? You know, because you could see everybody else was just kind of there, just like, ah, checking the block, get me out of here. And then next thing you know, you're on the street going, uh-oh. And so I always thought that was a great opportunity and for something right there to really be a program, you know. And I've seen a lot of people when I watch on LinkedIn now. I've been retired for since 16, but they're going through some pretty neat stuff now and signing on to, you know, industry and paralleling them for a while. I can't remember what the program was called, but like a mentorship program. And
that's right, like an internship. Some pretty neat
internships.
Yeah.
You know, guys that I knew that were O5s that are going through mm-hmm. these things and getting hired on by, you know, companies that I wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah,
know?
I mean, our board chair works for Honeywell, and I know Honeywell has a program like that. And actually, mm-hmm. you know, my West Point classmate and guy and I was in Special Forces with, Eric Walker, he did exactly that. He did an internship, worked in Honeywell for a spell, you know, proved his worth, as he always does. And they're like, hey, we like you. We'd love to hire you. So that's proof positive. Those kinds of programs are great. But yeah, I'm with you in that I'm not disparaging the CivilTap program, but that type of stuff is great. But, you know, the whole, hey, here's your resume, you know, here's LinkedIn. That might be quasi-necessary, but not sufficient.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and then let's talk about, you know, some of maybe the, well, let's talk about this. I mean, when you reach out to, you know, the enlisted and you know, junior officers or what have you, what are you preparing them for? Like, in other words, what is your perspective in terms of maybe how the Army and the CivilTap program is doing its best, but not quite, because I've got some ideas on the matter, but I really want to hear what you've got to say.
And I think the topic, although, you know, we're talking about Warriors of Sand and what you do for helping veterans and first responders overcome post-traumatic stress, But there's other aspects, and career and job after plays a role into the mental health and psyche of an individual, especially a military member coming out. So it is somewhat related to everything that you do to assist folks, males and females in your cohorts. It's
part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, and exactly.
Purpose, value.
Well, that's exactly it.
What we try to talk about at those and individually for transitioning military members is the TAP program is good, but it is a checklist of Department of Defense mandated. And I think the professionals do a good job, but their goal is to meet the checklist. It's not necessarily to get Mike or Matt or Jane or whoever into a meaningful career, okay? And it's not their fault, but what we try to talk about is, here's what you can really expect. Hey, you're not gonna get 30 days of vacation time a year, probably like you do in the military. You may get 2 weeks, maybe, okay? And for maybe higher ranking non-commissioned officers or officers, guess what? You're probably not going to have an assistant that's going to help you. Are you ready to roll up your sleeves a little bit more and do more administrative tasks that you maybe did earlier in your career? Because that's the reality of, I'd say, both the public and private sector out of the military. So it isn't an in-your-face negativity. It's here's what you can really expect. Yeah. So because a lot of times what I've found in some cases, regardless of rank, folks kind of see themselves. Remember, the military makes up 7%. Veterans make up 7% of the population. Active duty makes up less than 1% of the U.S. population, active duty. Point being, you're kind of a special member of society. Folks see the uniform. They don't necessarily look at the rank, which is great. But you are somebody that's very, 1% of the population. All of a sudden, the uniform comes up off. Guess what? You're on the 99%. And the uniform has come off, and some tie their identity to that uniform.
Totally.
So, and I think the longer you're in, the more you're institutionalized, and the more that identity comes into play. So what we try to do is simply get veterans. We're not there for we have folks from all different companies, public and private sector. The intent isn't to recruit. The intent is to teach, coach, mentor. And if that leads to a job, great. But our intention is to fill in the gaps so they know what they can really expect. And as Matt alluded to, it's a good program, and to maybe take advantage of that program while they're in it and really take advantage of what they teach, but also know, hey, there's another side to industry. It has gotten a lot better, as Matt also said. There are programs where you can get into companies for 6 months, et cetera. So I think it's really improved, but I'm still passionate about it because as a veteran, I hope veterans can get back into the society they left and make meaningful contributions and have a good life and a good career after having served their country.
That's right.
So. No, those are all, tons of good points. There's the values piece, right? Hey, Army values and all of that. And I think people expect the duty motivation, selfless service. And there's some of that. I mean, you can't, overgeneralize and say, hey, that's everyone in the Army or that's no one in the civilian sector. But I think maybe some of the friction lies in expectations in terms of, hey, this is DOD or Army culture. And that culture is pervasive all throughout America, the corporate sector, private sector. No. And I think that's one of the first things. Two is this notion that people intuitively understand the value proposition of the veteran, right? They don't. I think Art DeGroat from K-State was one of the first, guys that I never taught, lieutenant colonel, PhD type, that kind of sent up that Red Star cluster, and you're like, what? Yeah, the corporate sector is not going to greet you with wet, sloppy kisses. And it's not them being mean-spirited. It's just many of them, they can't even relate to you. They have no idea what you're about. So there's that, so it's really incumbent upon the individual to be able to articulate what it is that they're bringing to the table. And my experience, again, with CIFLTAP, like you were saying, good, within reason, but they did the MOS or military occupational specialty for those that don't know. So I'm 18 Alpha Special Forces officer. Now you're an engineer. Those skill sets readily equate to the private sector, especially the civil engineering, what have you. But for me, they did the MOS mapping, you know, hey, Special Forces Officer, Ranger, SAMS grad. And they're like, you can be a security guard.
That's right.
And I was just like, you know, I've got loftier aspirations than that. You know, right. not disparaging security guards, but it's like, come on, man. I've got, you know, a little bit of a higher skill set by virtue of the positions that I've held in the education. So you have to go out and to be able to advocate for yourself. And the last thing I'll talk about, is having your identity, as we say, inextricably linked with who it is that you were in the military. You know, hey, Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel, you know, CW4, super, you know, high ranking guy, instructor pilot. I always joked when my kids talk back to me, I'm like, you know, people used to salute me and call me sir, right? What happened to those days? But anyway, you were going to say something.
Nah, I don't know now. It was just nothing super important other than like the opportunities at that SL TAP. And they give you this sheet that says, you know, hey, this is what you could be. Yours was silly. Mine was too. Here I am, a Black Hawk aviator, instructor of instructors. And and it came back with like, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And so,
you could be a corporate chopper pilot. And while on one hand you're like, okay, yeah, that's easy. But without really understanding as an instructor pilot and the programs that you manage.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That your skill set was just so much
You know, driving the helicopter was the easy part in everything I did. It was all the systems and all the programs and the administration. It's like, you understand the leadership and well, you weren't a colonel, so I know that. And it's like, yeah, you're right. I wasn't a commander. I wasn't these things, but we still ran systems. I mean, we still were. The other thing you don't understand is we show up on time. We do our work before the day is over, or we're not going home. You know, these are just things that are important to us.
So the hard skills, the technical skills, easily transferable. It's the soft skills that you're getting at, which I think are less intuitive.
Right.
And I laugh because you get out into the private sector, you talk to industry, you talk to small business owners, and they're like, you know, I just need people that can take instruction, show up on time, lead when they need to, they're conscientious, and you're like, and all of those skills and values are resident in most military, and not every military, it's not monolithic, like everyone's, you know, you've got really good high performers, and then you've got less than high performers.
In every population.
By and large, I mean, those are the ethos and values that are valued in the Army, and especially if you had a career in the Army, chances are you inculcated that. But I laugh because the very things that they're clamoring for are what are resident in most military people, and they don't even realize it half the time. Because they're so focused on those hard skill sets.
With that, though, there's opportunity. And my hope, I think, and a lot of the folks that volunteer with us to help transition veterans into the workforce, is that you can educate the 93% of the population. Yeah. It's not a veteran versus non-veteran piece, but you got to educate companies. And we want veterans to land well. And because a lot of times most people, what they see on TV or what they get in the media is what they think of a veteran instead of what a veteran can bring to the table. So part of our role is to educate those companies on what a veteran can bring to their workforce. So that's what we try to do, because it is tied to not necessarily identity, but it is tied to, if a veteran's struggling out there, it can lead to other aspects of struggles that are not good. Everybody wants to be on a good team. I mean, the military is probably the greatest team, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, great teams. Folks want to contribute, and I think veterans especially want to contribute. So we want to give them the best opportunity to do that in a good setting and get a good second career.
No, that's a great point, man. I mean, everyone wants to be part of a winning team.
Although at the same time, we got to learn to adapt, right? We have to learn that once we come out, that the language that we have is a secret language amongst the 1%ers and nobody understands us, you know, and that's, we got to just know that. And, you know, it used to make me mad that I'm an expert using this language. I'm a nothing without it, but I can learn the translation, you know, and we need to, and we can. And once we start talking, you know, the correct industry talk, then there's nothing that can stop us.
No, I totally concur, Matt. It is my biggest point to transitioning veterans is to own the process. Just like when we all volunteered, you own the process to volunteer, own the process and the transition. You are your best advocate going forward, but reach out to the veteran community that's made the transition as a mentor or anything to, that you can get assistance on. That's my goal. So it gets back to folks adapted when they went in the military, they made the decision to volunteer, take that same ethos and put it into the transition when you're going back to the society you left, and don't depend on entitlements or anything like that. Utilize the same ethic that got you in the military as you exit the military to make a softer landing.
I mean, if I come into the military at 18, I don't know how to pay medical insurance. That's right. I don't know how to do some of this stuff. And then I'm in my 30s and, hey, I just never got exposed to it because it was all handled for me, you know? So that makes sense that we need to learn that, you know? At the same time, you probably picked it up a little bit, you know, having a family maybe or something, but that makes sense to me that there would be some training there.
And military members are adaptable. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get caught up years in the military, but it's getting back into that mindset to land softly, and that will be better for your family, better for the individual, and better for folks' mental health along the way.
Yeah.
So.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So we've got to, I'll say, end this episode shortly. We'll tee up stopping veteran suicide. We won't talk too long about that, but that'll be, I'll say, a segue into the next episode in terms of, you know, where it is that you and I came to know one another, Tony. But just a minute or two, why is that such a passion for you, stopping veteran suicide?
My passion for veteran suicide, as I was transitioning in 2013, you know, it really hadn't hit the media and things like that much. It really came in and was publicized really around 2014, 2015, you know, 21 veterans a day. And then the studies showed it was 17, but it was a problem. It was nearly double the societal average of veteran suicide versus non-veteran suicide. And unfortunately still is a problem today. But I'll be short on this. What really drove me was I really got tired of, you know, 21 push-ups a day, et cetera. That's great for publicizing about veteran suicide, but it wasn't solving the problem and doing it. So that's when I thought, okay, how can we maybe change this? Can't change the world, but how can we make a meaningful impact to stop veteran suicide, even if it's one veteran? How can we make a meaningful impact versus just doing push-ups or publicizing it on Facebook or whatever? That's what drove me, and ultimately the conversation with Warriors Ascent back in 2016.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. No, so tune in for the next episode, and we'll speak about that at length. So before we part, I just want to dedicate this episode to Master Sergeant Ryan Sipes. So he came through our program not too long ago. Died of natural causes unexpectedly just last week. So, you know, Ryan hails from Topeka. He's with the 190th Air Refueling Wing of the Kansas National Guard. We attended his funeral, you know, today. And I'll tell you, he was loved by many. You know, his unit was out there, spoke very highly of him. Just very, very impactful. I know his father came up to me and said that his time with the program, with Warriors Ascent, that it really made an impact on his life. And I don't mean that in a shameless, oh, our program's great, but it just does my heart good to know that the program had that level of impact on him, so much so that his father was like, hey, you know, he talked about it a lot. It really made a difference to him. So, you know, for that, we're glad we played a part in that. But rest in peace, brother.
Yeah.
You know, a great father, warrior, and, you know, all the best. We wish, you know, we wish his family the best, condolences. And anyway, so we honor him.
Yep.
This episode is dedicated to Ryan. All right. So we will see you all next time.
Hi, Matt Hastings here, sending a thank you for watching this episode of the Warriors Ascent podcast. You know, we strive to build a community of warriors made up of our nation's veterans and first responders. And to reach as many of those in need as possible, we need your help. Please just smash that like button and comment or share our content. Warriors Ascent is a Kansas City-based nonprofit that aids veterans and first responders with PTS. I went through this effective program and want those that are struggling to find what I found, check us out on our website at wordsofscent.org.